The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Lila and David Sears are a married couple who are not licensed therapists. The following opinions are their own and should not be taken as medical or psychological counseling advice. Relationships today face more challenges than at many times in recent history. Join married couple Lila and David Sears as they navigate the world of relationships in Empathy Ever After.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Empathy Ever After. I'm David Sears with my lovely and talented wife, Lila Sears.
Hello, everybody.
Sorry for taking last week off, but luckily, what happened last week is going to tie into what we're talking about today.
Yes.
And today we're talking about relationships when one partner or both have chronic conditions.
Yes, chronic illness and disabling chronic conditions.
And Lila and I each have a couple, so it's more fun.
Yes.
Lila's tends to be more severe than mine. As long as I stay medicated, I don't really have issues. But Lila really can't prevent the migraines. We know when the pressure's about to drop or it's going to get a really hot or really cold spell. That it's probably going to trigger her migraines, and sometimes they can last a day and a half. Sometimes it'll last 20-some straight days.
Yes.
So we roll with it, and it's a very common illness, surprisingly, that, what did you say, 1 in 4 people?
Well, so according to the CDC, the majority of adults have some type of chronic condition, some type of chronic, major chronic illness. And 1 in 4 adults has some type of disabling condition or disability. Now, as far as migraines, which is what I have, and I have chronic migraine, it's like 16% of adults have migraine, something like that. 12 to 16% of adults experience migraine, but only like 1 to 2% of all adults have chronic migraine.
Aren't you lucky?
I am. It's about the same incidence as natural redheadedness.
Ah.
So, yeah.
There you go.
Not related in any way, just...
Redheads have more migraines.
No,
that's what I heard you just say.
That's not at all what I said.
It's totally what you just said.
No.
Redheads, she put that curse on you.
I didn't.
She put that evil on you, Ricky Bobby.
I did not. Not at all.
But
no, go ahead.
it's something that we have learned to deal with together. It started getting worse around her mid-30s when it really just started just ratcheting up.
It was really about the time I turned 40. They say everything kind of goes to hell in a handbasket when you turn 40, and they're not kidding. About the time I turned 40 was when my migraines went from being episodic to, because I would go for months at a time without having a migraine when I was in my 20s, to really having chronic migraine about the time I turned 40, which was, of course, the end of 2020. nothing was going on at that point. There was no kind of stress that was unusual.
Not at all.
Nothing was going on in 2020 that was stressful to anybody. Nope. Nobody had anything
and
weird going on.
It was, it's something she's learned, to deal with. And I've learned to deal with. There are some days where it's, hey, can you make dinner? Or, hey, I really need what we call cheeseburger therapy, which is a cheeseburger, some French fries and a Coke in the dark with maybe some last podcasts quietly going on. We've found ways to deal with it. It kind of just happened. She'd had migraines before, but it wasn't as big an issue before. And they've just slowly gotten worse as she's gotten older. I think it was our third or fourth date. I told you that I was schizophrenic and had severe depression.
Yeah, and I don't remember exactly when you told me that.
But that was around the time I was like, I love her. I need to know if this is a deal breaker for her. So I'm going to put myself out there. And it wasn't. And she's helped me deal with mine and medication adjustments and various things we've had to deal with as we've adjusted to new medicine. But if you're just starting out with a date, a relationship, it's scary because you don't want to admit to your potential partner that, hey, guess what? I've got this condition. And some people, it scares them away. And some people are like, cool, that's all right. We'll work through it together. And it's difficult because you are being incredibly vulnerable and you want them to accept your vulnerability.
Yeah. If you're opening up like that early on in a relationship or when you first start dating somebody, you don't want an illness, something that you can't help, to be the reason that you're rejected by somebody you're interested in. But that's not to say that that person is, you know, it's not always that that person is a terrible person.
It's not. Some people it's legitimately scary for, and they don't know how to process it.
Yeah.
I mean, you took it really well. I think it's part of your, your social work background with your, your mother and Daybreak. And you've seen a lot of people with mental illness come in and seen some that were high functioning and some that were just, they didn't want to take their meds. They didn't mind being crazy and being inconvenient for others.
Well, we don't use the word crazy, but, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's part of it. And, you know, having had, you know, family members who had different mental illnesses and that kind of thing, you know, different, like, spouses of cousins and that kind of stuff who had mental illness and stuff. It was like, well, you know, we can deal with this. It's like any other disease. A disease of the brain is another, just another organ. It's just another organ in your body that can get a disease like any other.
Unfortunately. And sometimes the mental ones can be really rough. In all likelihood, due to all my past concussions and everything, I was going to get to deal with me with being demented in some way. So, we're trying to take steps to prevent that, but, that's something that our parents and, elder Gen Xers are having to deal with now with their partners, being completely different people due to Alzheimer's, dementia, or other type of, like sundowners, other type of mental illnesses along that line. So
yeah,
it's difficult. And you really have to love that person.
Oh yeah, for sure. And we don't want to downplay anything that a healthy partner or you know, a partner who, you know, two partners who are disabled, one of them, you know, you never want to compare that. You never want to play the who's more disabled game.
I'll win that one, obviously.
you never want to compare, like, who's got it worse or who's got it better.
And it's again, it's a very difficult thing because Lila, when she has her full-blown migraine attack, the full-blown, which is she has to be in a dark room with it cool and cannot really take much noise. That's difficult because I'm a very loud person. So I've learned to walk softly and always be kind of like, hey, using my NPR voice. So talking to her that way. And there's some days when she can power through. She'll cook dinner. She'll hang with me for a little bit. She's like, I got to tap out.
And yeah.
It's... That, I think the frustrating thing for her and me is that it can go from okay to kind of a pain to brr in less than an hour, just because you never know what's going to happen. And that's, it's rough because not only do you see your partner go through all this, but you just feel helpless because you can't do anything for them.
Right.
And like we've tried some stuff, the Delta 8 gummies have helped with it a little bit, but I mean, we really, even the new medicine she tries, they seem to only work for a little bit. It's rough because I just feel,
yeah,
I want to help you, but I can't. And I just don't know what to do. Don't know what to do with my hands. Just
I don't know. Don't know what to do. Well, and, you know, I think that the thing to remember when your partner has a chronic condition is that nobody wants to get better more than the person who is ill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it may look sometimes like somebody who is ill is not doing that, particularly somebody who's chronically ill, is not doing things like you might want them to do them. Like, they're not taking as many steps, or they're not taking them as quickly as you might want them to take. But you don't know what they've already tried. You don't know what they've already researched. You don't know what they've discussed with their doctor necessarily. And so,
and their level of pain may be different than yours.
Like, yeah.
You may think, oh, come on, just suck it up. But you have no idea how actually debilitating what they're going through is. They may appear normal on the outside. You're like, come on, you can do this. But when actually it's everything in their power to just do what they're doing that moment.
Well, when you have a chronic condition, you get to the point where a lot of us mask our pain, you know, just to kind of get through the day so that we don't always, you know, look like we're suffering. You know, we don't want to look like life sucks for us all the time.
You don't want to be Debbie Downer.
Right.
You don't want the pity. You don't want, you're right. Just like, we're normal people. We just have something that sucks.
Yeah. And so if you mask pain all the time, you know, you have days where you're better and worse at it. I think that what's important to remember is you have to just believe people when they tell you how much they hurt and what they're capable of, because not believing someone is what gets you into trouble.
Yeah.
Not believing someone's pain level in particular, like pain, like when you get into a medical setting, you know, pain is considered, you know, a vital measure. Pain is considered, I don't know exactly the word, but it's like pulse, it's like respirations, it's pain, you know, you take their pain level, and it's 1 out of 10, and if your pain is an 8 out of 10, and that's what you report, then that's what it is, and you need to believe that person.
And we use a scale at work where 1 is best day ever, and 10 is you're being attacked by a shark while stung by bees and a bear's eating your head. So that's our scale,
yeah.
for pain. And people laugh, but, you know, it really does feel to you. And I've seen you on your worst days. You cannot function. It hurts to move. Your equilibrium's all messed up, and you just want to stop hurting. And
yeah,
it is absolutely horrible for me to see that, because I can't do anything to make you feel better. Mm-hmm. I'll let you on a Coke. you want your lavender scented microwave thing Aunt Connie gave you? You know?
Yeah. What can I do?
Cheeseburger therapy?
What can I do? Please tell me something I can do.
Ovaltine?
Thank you. Nothing. And I think that when you have a chronic condition and you have better days and worse days, like I do, because that, you know, you're talking about really, really bad days, and days when it's really, really bad, are days when I think it's easier maybe for most people to kind of sympathize or empathize and be like, okay, well, this person is clearly sick. You know, this person clearly has something going on that is not normal. And this person clearly has, you know, a problem that needs solved. But on days when I get up and I go to work and I come home and I'm dragging, but I still manage to get dinner cooked. But then I just kind of want to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the days when it probably feels like maybe a little more frustrating for the average person, because I have used up all of my energy in combating the lower level of pain that I'm in and the lower level of, you know, functioning that I'm at. Like, I got through the necessities of my day, and that's all I managed to get through.
And when you come home, you got nothing for me.
And I got nothing left in the tank now.
Mm-hmm. And that fatigue can be rough on relationships, mm-hmm. especially if your partner's the polar opposite of you and absolutely is the biggest extrovert in the world and just wants to talk and cuddle and do everything. You're just like, I want it quiet and don't touch me, you know? So it's some challenges for both parts. Mm-hmm. You have to learn to adapt. I learned to take the times when you have energy, we run with it. And the days you don't, well, I'll just come in here, leave you be, read quietly or put TV on low and just let you do your thing. Cause there's really nothing I can do for it. And that fatigue factor can be rough on a relationship because a partner could feel like, why does everyone else get his or her best while I seem to just get nothing? And it can lead to resentment. And that's something that should be addressed by each partner. And you have to understand they're trying to do their best for their social obligations, whether it be work, whether it be taking care of other family members. And they've given up everything they've got. They've got nothing left for you. And it sucks, but you have to realize they've done the best they could. And your partner just needs a way to cope with the pain she's been putting up with all day. Cause you don't, it's basically Chinese water torture.
Yeah. Where
it's just a nagging drip, 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 drip through the entire day. And they're fighting through it. They're doing their best to fight through it. But finally they have to tap out at some point.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people explain this through what's called spoon theory. If you've never heard of that before, that is, it's a visual metaphor. I don't know if she's the person who came up with it or not, but it was first popularized by a writer named Christine Misurandino.
She may be Italian.
She may be Italian-American, but I think she has lupus, and she
was... Is she sure? Has she seen Dr. House?
She was writing for a site called You Don't Look Sick, and she was talking about how, you know, getting through a day, each day is different, and you start at the beginning of each day with a different number of spoons, for example, and each task in your day takes a certain number of those spoons away. So at the start of each day, you may start the day with 15 spoons. You may start at the start of that day with 7 spoons. You may start with 2.
Some days you start with 0.
Well, and if you start with 0, that's a day where you are staying in bed because you got nothing.
Yeah. And it's... I've had a few of those with my depression where I just did not want to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's harder, I would say perceptionally, not actually, perceptionally, it's harder for men to admit they have no spoons. They just want to say, put their head down and just plug on through it. And that's why I think men tend to run themselves in the ground more because they're less likely to tap out. Well, women, I think this is going to sound weird. You're more in touch with your body, I'd say.
Maybe.
And you understand the mental physical health connection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is scientific. This is a David Sears theory, but I think
TM.
But I think you're more in tune with your body mentally and physically than men are. Because men are the worst at, oh, it hurts. I'm just going to not make it hurt.
Rub some dirt on it.
Rub some dirt in it. You out there. Oh, you have a torn ACL and you have no functioning cartilage in your knee. Ah, just wrap it up. Rub some dirt on it. I'm good to go.
Walk it off. I'll ice it.
Walk it off. So, but I don't think, and it's a societal thing where men are supposed to be macho and we hold up Bear Bryant playing with a broken leg against Tennessee or Kurt Angle with a broken freaking neck, winning mm-hmm. a gold medal. You know, mm-hmm. those are held high in esteem. Mm-hmm. And
when in reality, they were dumb.
They were
very dumb. And they could have done some really permanent catastrophic damage to their bodies.
Yeah.
And they did not have to do what they did.
They did not.
They did it at their own peril.
Yeah.
There was no need for them to do that.
Well, this is a whole other conversation. Kurt Angle versus Simone Biles. Kurt Angle, 1996, broken freaking neck. Mm-hmm. Simone Biles going through a mental health crisis.
Well, people call that a mental health issue. Yes, your brain.
It's PTSD, but.
Well, okay, but she also had the twisties in Tokyo, which means she couldn't orient herself in space.
But that goes back to the mental.
Right, but if you can't orient yourself.
She was in the Orient.
Oh, God. If you can't orient yourself in space as a gymnast.
That's dangerous.
That is extremely physically dangerous. So that is a real threat.
It is. But it's perceptionally, men have to be tougher. They have to plow through. They can't tap out.
Which more men should be taking that opportunity to rest and to take care of themselves when they need to and to tap out when they must. More men need to be taking care of their mental and physical health because it's particularly their mental health because the male suicide rate is so high and, because men's mental health outcomes are just generally fairly abysmal in Western culture.
Mm-hmm. But getting back to the main topic, sorry, I went on a little tangent there. That spoon theory has some days when, like you said, you've got a full drawer of spoons, you got no spoons.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those days you have no spoons, you can feel completely unattractive and unloved by your partner. You just feel like a burden to your partner. Like you don't.
Like I have nothing to give. And if I have nothing to give, then what's the point of being in a relationship? If I feel like I have nothing to contribute, then why am I even here?
Mm-hmm.
Why is my partner here?
Because I love you.
And
sometimes that's all you can do is just love your partner. Because there are going to be days when they're dealing with their condition where they have nothing. They have absolutely nothing. They don't want to talk. They need to sleep all day. They need to be in the dark all day. You've got to do all the housework. Is normally it's a 50-50 split, but there's some days you and the other partner who's doing okay has to do all the laundry, has to do all the dishes, has to cook. And sometimes the partner who's not doing anything will feel useless and completely just a big burden to their partner who's doing everything.
Yeah. I definitely think that there's more to the feeling unattractive, though, with a chronic illness. There's more to it than feeling like you don't have anything to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times with a chronic illness, there's stuff about it that just makes you feel, number one, it makes you feel physically bad. anything that makes you feel physically bad makes you feel kind of unattractive. If it makes you feel sluggish, if it makes you feel fatigued, if it makes you feel bloated, if it makes you feel...
like electricity shooting through your fingers.
Yeah, like electricity shooting down your arms. It's going to make you feel unattractive. Sometimes in chronic conditions, there are things about them that are gross. We both have chronic conditions that we both have some digestive issues.
We do.
that are amitriptyline. Yes, that are some things about our digestive health that is a little bit gross that can make you feel unattractive. That might be something that your partner deals with or that you deal with that can make you feel unattractive.
Especially when you've been hugging a toilet all day.
I mean, you know, some people, and I've had ulcers and stuff like that, that, you know, that's not cute.
It's not. And I remember that you when I was first diagnosed with my digestive stuff, it took some weird adjustments on my part because I had to adjust what I was eating. I had to watch certain foods that could be triggers. And there were some days when we were testing the medicine where I literally would be on the couch for 5 minutes and right back in the bathroom. And it's just, it's, you don't feel attractive. That's one of the words you never feel. I don't know anyone who feels attractive when they're on a toilet.
Yeah.
Maybe Rodin's thinker, but other than
maybe,
that,
maybe, I don't know.
But it's just, it's a difficult thing to deal with, and you don't feel attractive. You don't feel sexy. You don't feel any way worthy of affection or anything because you just like, I look so gross and I'm so disgusting. But another part of when you or your partner have a chronic condition is one partner may end up becoming a caregiver. Mm-hmm. And that adds all types of stress to the relationship, whether it be financial, because the other partner has to take time off of work to take care of the chronically ill partner, or the chronically ill partner can only work part-time. So you go from a 2 income to a 1.5 income, or sometimes that chronic illness, they have to go on disability, and disability in this country is not taking care of people that are chronically disabled. And it's rough, especially when you're that caregiver, because that means not only are you taking care of the partner who's chronically ill, if you have children, you've got to be the main parent for them. And, oh, mommy or daddy isn't able to do that today. They're not feeling well, but I can help you. And sometimes with little kids, they don't understand that. Mm-hmm. So you're having to explain to little kids in ways they can understand, even though they may not be able to mentally process it yet because of their age. You have to take on responsibility sometimes for not only the household duties, but you have to help the in-laws or your own parents. So you're having to just be a caregiver to multiple people, and that can lead to burnout for that partner who's being a caregiver in multiple areas.
Yeah. And that can lead to some problems for the caregiving partner that look sort of like chronic illness. Stress and caregiver burnout can lead to health problems. And
you're not getting rest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't get that reset.
Yeah. If you don't get rest, if you don't get self care, then you can get some of the same symptoms that your partner with chronic illness is getting. You're getting the same symptoms of the fatigue and all the other things that your partner might be going through. So you could look like you're having some
sympathy
pain or whatever, that, you know, then you're both going through it.
Yep.
And that's not fun either.
Nope. And I think that when you get to that point, you have to worry about resentment.
Yeah.
Because one partner be like, why the bleep am I doing all this? You know, and they'll be like, I could just leave.
Yeah, I could have. I don't have to either. I could have a partner who isn't sick, I think is maybe a worse thing to think somehow. Or I could just be single.
Yeah.
And not have to, not quote unquote, have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
That seems incredibly selfish to me.
It does, but I also understand some people have a breaking point. Sure. And some people can be your ride or die. And then some people, when the going gets tough, I'm out,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, we've seen this before where couples, divorce because one person is terminal or has
one person gets cancer.
Yeah.
And I've seen that a couple of times. I've seen, one partner, and in the cases I've seen, it would be where the woman gets cancer and the husband divorces her. And it makes me want to get very stabby. because when you get married, you take a vow that says in sickness and in health.
Mm-hmm.
And now if you chose different vows, or if you're not married or whatever, there's a difference. But if that was your vow, I think you really ought to do some soul searching before you decide, oh, my partner got cancer, I guess deuces.
Or get Joe Estevez and he'll take your soul.
Yeah, well, nobody's going to understand that reference, but you and me and three other people who have seen that movie.
You know what? It's worth it. We may have a few Misties listen to us. Shout out.
Yes.
The lesser Estevez.
Yes. Oh, goodness. We have a sickness and it's called watching bad movies. For fun. No.
The anyway. Only prescription are talking robots.
You're getting really off track, Sears.
I am. All right. But anyways, back to that. With the caregiver aspect, it can be just a problem because that means you have to reduce your social life. And there are some people who are incredibly social and want to be out every night seeing friends, going to book clubs, doing dinner parties. But because the partner is unable to do that, they have to stay home, take care of the partner. It hurts them, especially if you have one partner who's a social butterfly and one who is a basically a recluse, you know, and it's difficult for people when you both have been doing stuff out and about so much and the other partner's pretty much a homebody. That hurts. Mm-hmm. It's rough and you have to balance it. And you sometimes end up having to sacrifice a lot of your social fun to take care of your partner. And that can be rough on a relationship.
And you have to remember, too, that, you know, again, nobody wants to have to curb their social calendar because they're in pain or because they're sick. They're doing that because they don't have a choice. They're not doing that to you as a partner. They're not doing that because they're trying to make your life miserable. They're doing that because they're sick and they can't help it. And that's just unfortunately what their body is dictating to them that they have to do. There's, you know, we talked a little bit about the financial strain of chronic illness. Unfortunately, you know, I have a job to where I can go on days when I don't feel particularly well, and I can take off when I'm not able to go in.
You're very fortunate.
Yes, because, you know, I'm not somewhere where somebody's going to be tracking every 15 minutes that I'm, you know, there and that I'm clicking the keyboard or whatever. And it's not that way for a lot of people in this country. And that's very unfortunate. What's also unfortunate is the cost of medical care.
Yeah. Medical bills can be very expensive. And when you are relying on one partner's insurance, if they're at a job where the insurance isn't particularly well, but you're having to cover both people, that can get very expensive very fast with the high deductibles, mm-hmm. as well as generally chronic illnesses require a lot of medication.
Mm, yeah.
And a lot of those medications can be very expensive.
I take a medication that is like $900 per prescription. I take a medication that's over $1,000 per prescription. And, you know, it's... If I didn't have excellent health insurance and a copay card from the drug manufacturer to help pay the copay, then, you know, I'd be in a real bind.
You would be. And we experienced that a little bit when we first got married. Neither one of us had really great health insurance. And my antipsychotic, which helps me not hear voices, my insurance decided we're not paying for that anymore. And it was a scramble between my psychiatrist and the insurance company to find one that was equally as potent, but more affordable.
But wasn't going to be $650 a month or something?
Yeah.
Which is...
That was just for 30 pills, too.
Yeah. $600 for 30 pills. And that was way, way back in like 2008. Yeah. So I can't imagine. Of course, it's probably gone generic by now, but
yeah. But luckily the one they switched me to has worked well. But it can be financial burdens. You definitely see a lot of bankruptcies because of having
most consumer bankruptcies in the United States are at least partly contributable to medical debt.
Yeah.
Which is not a thing they do in other civilized countries.
No. In other Western countries.
Yeah.
China, they just kill you. So. But while you have all of that, the thing that Lila and I have the best is we're a team. Go Team Sears is our team motto.
Yeah. Go Team Sears.
And we know that there are going to be days when she cannot do anything. My days where I can't do anything are very rare, and she's very supportive of that. I mean, I think I've taken my fair share out of torn quads and broken hands when you've had to take care of me. But it's just
the orthopedic surgeries.
Yes. But you have to be a team, and you have to approach this from a team mentality. And in football, there are days when there are just mismatches that you have to adjust your game plan to. If you've got an overpowering defensive end on the blind side, you've got to send a running back or do a combo block with the guard to help that tackle. So Lila and I understand there are going to be some days when there is just so much she can't do. We focus on what the biggest priority would be for that day, get that done.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand there are going to be some days. Look, right now, our dishes are a mess right now in the sink. I'll say that right now because I've been laid up with work and she's been laid up with migraines. So
haven't been laid up with work. You have not been in this house with work.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, you have been out. You have been out of this house with work.
I've been up to my eyeballs in work.
And I have not had a great last couple of weeks. I've not had a great last couple of weeks with my chronic illness. I have a really hard time sometimes coming to grips with the fact that I have a chronic illness even. And I think that, that a lot of times you help me to even come to terms with it.
How many times have I said, I know you're not choosing this?
Yeah.
And I have to assure you, I know you're not faking and you're not choosing this.
Yeah.
And you just start bawling. And I feel bad because I can't make you not cry. I don't want you to cry. But I'm just like, you can't help the way you're feeling right now. I know you're not choosing to feel like your head's about to explode. You're in a movie Scanners, so
yeah. Cronenberg done got a hold of me. There you go.
But I'm just like, you have to be supportive of your partner, and it's rough. It is really rough. There are some days where I have zero spoons because I'm stressed out with all my ongoings. But I come home and Lila is just rough. She's a wreck. She's just so down, so hurting, and I just got to do what I got to do to take care of her. And just put myself aside. It sucks, but I know we don't really get into religion much, but that's part of Christianity is dying to oneself. So it's important that you are a team, that you know you have each other's backs regardless, and you have to support them through the thick and the thin, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health.
Another thing is about being a team is neither one of you feeling like the sick person is indebted to the healthy person or the caregiver for the caregiving or even just understanding. Like,
oh, you owe me so much money.
You know, because indebtedness is something that leads to resentment in a relationship.
It is, and you don't want it to be like, man, she owes me a night out. I need to go eat chicken wings at Hooters and watch UFC. You know, she owes me that. No, she owes you jack squat. When you took the vows of marriage, you have committed to that person for the rest of your life, regardless of what happens. And well, there are a few exceptions, which we'll get into probably with one of her violence in relationships down the road. Talking about that. And she has a few helpful hints about that, seeing she deals with that. But for the most part, you are with your partner. You have made that commitment. You are ride or die.
Mm-hmm.
And that frustrates me when I see people cut out because their partner has a chronic condition or because their partner is just something that is an annoyance to them, you know?
Yeah. When it's something that the partner cannot help, then it's not something that you're indebted over.
You're not. Because you have to realize the partner did not choose this.
Yeah.
The partner wants to feel as normal as possible and be as normal as possible. And they did not want this life of pain or whatever condition. Sometimes it's not pain. Sometimes it's MS or an autoimmune disorder pops up. They did not choose that. They just want to feel normal. They want to be back to normal. They don't want to have to take 30 pills a day. They just want to be normal. And you have to understand that. Mm-hmm. You have to understand they are not choosing this life.
Mm-hmm.
The thug life chose them.
So, the drug life.
The drug life chose yes. them. So, there are some days when you just have to go. And you know what? There's a great thing called couples therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get some stuff out there and be honest and have a third party work with both of you. Because sometimes it takes someone who's not in the thick of things with you, who's looking at this from 40,000 feet, to say, why do you feel this way? Why are you doing this way? Did you ever realize that she was doing this? Did you ever realize he was doing this? And they can help give you advice and help you see your relationship in a new perspective.
Yeah, and you can go to couples therapy, or you can go to individual therapy, or you can do both. I go to individual therapy, and you know, my individual therapist is very good about, you know, reminding me to take care of myself, because if I don't take care of myself, then my body will shut down and make me take care of myself.
Yep.
But you know, couples therapy can help get some of these issues out into the open and help you think through them before resentment or some of those other things become a bigger problem.
Exactly. And I want to make an executive decision. We're going to talk about one of the biggest problems in relationships next week. A lot of the chronic condition may have a lack of physical intimacy in your relationship, and that can be frustrating. So next week, We're talking physical intimacy, ooh, aka sex and relationships. What?
I'm utterly terrified. Our parents don't need to listen to this one.
You can.
No.
I don't mind.
I forbid it.
I'm weird.
Just, you're not listening to it next week, parents.
But that is an issue, again, because one partner may have an incredible sex drive, and the other one, they have nothing because they hurt so much. And there's nothing there, and it can be frustrating. And it could really lead to resentment, but the person thinks with their genitals and not with their actual head.
Yeah, and again, your partner wishes they didn't hurt. I promise, as someone who hurts, you know, your partner who has a chronic condition wishes that they didn't have that. They wish they didn't have that going on more than you know. And more than you do. And it's, you know, if there was anything that they felt like they could do to fix it, they would be doing that. And it's not a matter of, dear God, please don't tell them. If you would just drink more water.
or lose some weight. You want to play some red flag, green flag?
Let's play some red flag.
This is the Dr. Paul Linsky red flag, green flag. Remember that Paul Linsky is an orthopedic surgeon in Milwaukee.
He's not an orthopedic surgeon. He's a cardiothoracic surgeon
in Milwaukee, and his care is greater than or lesser than any other cardiothoracic surgeon in Milwaukee. All right. There you go. We'll get that right one day. All right. But that's another red flag, green flag. You know, if you would just drink more water, lose some weight, and get enough sleep, you'd be fine. You know, that is a huge red flag.
Yeah. Yeah. Because your partner has a chronic condition. They have been diagnosed with a chronic condition, probably. If they've got a diagnosis, hey, if you're not a medical professional, then let's don't be given medical professional advice.
You know, just because you read something online,
it doesn't mean you're correct.
Nor does it mean that's correct.
It doesn't mean what you read is correct.
I can post anything online, including my favorite photographs of the pyramids being built. That's one of my favorite things to post online.
Yes. Your favorite Abraham Lincoln quotes.
Don't believe what you saw on the internet, Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
But so a green flag to that would be like, I don't know what you need. Tell me what you need. What can I do for you? And you know what? It sucks, but sometimes their answer is nothing. And mm-hmm. all you can do is just hold them or give them some space. And that's really hard for some people who want to be all up in your business with their partner. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they just need space and nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's all you can do. And you feel as a partner who can't do anything, you have mm-hmm. to realize they're not telling you you're nothing, that you're useless or anything. They can't do anything right now. It is just they're in the grips of an episode. And there's nothing you can do to help them out of it.
Yeah, because sometimes there is nothing that is going to help you. It's just something that they have to ride out. And sorry, it stinks for them more than it does for you, I promise.
Yep.
Now, sometimes your partner who is chronically ill may have some anger because of that, and it may occasionally be misdirected toward you. And that's something that a chronically ill partner does have to work on. I have to work on that myself sometimes. I try very hard not to misdirect my anger at hurting at
You're really
David.
Good at saying, it's not you, I just feel like bleep.
Yeah.
It's not you. I just hurt. I can't do anything.
Yeah. So a red flag might be, no, I don't want you to do anything. I want you to leave me alone.
And you've said that a few times. You've said that. But then you would come back later and you would say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just really upset right now. I'm not upset at you. I hurt. I'm on edge. I don't know what I need. I'm sorry. And then you start crying because you feel bad. And yeah. I'm like, babe, it's okay. I understand. It happens. It sucks, but it happens.
And, you know, understand that if your partner has some type of neurological or pain condition, which is one of the only things I can speak to on the massive list of things that are chronic conditions, crying sometimes is just part of that. And sometimes they may cry for what looks like no reason. But that's also a symptom of the illness.
It is. And it is cathartic. You do tend to feel, sometimes crying can make you actually feel better.
Sometimes. You get that out. Sometimes it makes it feel worse.
It can exacerbate it, but sometimes it just helps get it done. All right. One more red flag. What you got for me?
A red flag would be when a partner who is not the ill person insists on doing a thing that is going to make the chronic condition have a flare and then complain when it flares.
All right. I've been guilty of that. One of my absolute favorite restaurants in Birmingham is ridiculously loud, 100% loud. And it drives Lila insane every time we go there because there's no carpeting, there's high ceilings, lots of noise, sports are generally going on, people are yelling, drinking, toasting, dropping glasses and stuff. I realize if she comes with me that either we need to have silence on the way home or she will probably already be about to start or has started a migraine attack due to all that. So I can't get mad at her for making her go to one of my favorite restaurants just because I know it's going to trigger something there. And as a partner, I've learned to say, all right, could you handle going to Baumhauer's?
I didn't know if you were actually going to name the place.
Could you handle going to Baumhauer's or do we need to go to a more quiet restaurant? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're like, you know what? I'm feeling okay. As long as we're in and out and we don't dilly dally, we just order, eat, go. But like for a game, if we're going to go watch a game or something, she's like, no, you get your dad, you two go. I'll just stay put. Cause we've done that before where I would meet, my dad or friends, especially when Hooters used to have the WWE pay-per-views before it went to the network.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you just go meet with your friends at Hooters. You watch it and I'll be fine.
I cannot sit somewhere like that for hours on end.
And we've also learned that there are other things, like she can't do high top tables. She has to have her feet close to the ground. Otherwise it puts pressure on her back, which can trigger her neck, which can trigger her migraines. So we've learned things about that. And I mean, it's weird. I normally wouldn't think about that, but after the first couple times it happened, anytime they offer booth or table, I was like, is the table above the ground? Are you in stools? And they'll be like, yeah, I was like, can we get a booth? She's like, you may have to wait a few more minutes, but waiting that few more minutes is a lot more valuable than triggering a migraine because she's hurting. Mm-hmm. Hey buddy.
I will say, just cause you named the place, since Baumhauer's redid their restaurants recently, the redo is a better environment than the old one.
But I mean, it's, you're learning about that and you adjust. If we go to a concert, I know we need to either drive home in silence or have on some easy listening or a really calm podcast, because all that sound and the flashing lights, that's a big trigger.
I love concerts more than just about anything in the world. I will occasionally have to absolutely hide from a light show that's going on, though.
And we've learned to take earplugs.
Yeah.
And the earplugs reduce. I mean, you still hear the rock. Trust me, you hear the rock.
Oh, yeah.
But they reduce it so it's not as intense. And you hear the songs, but you don't get the ears ringing. You don't get the... Because ears ringing can trigger some of your stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
The tinnitus.
Yeah.
And you just learn and adapt. And that's what you have to do as a partner is, all right, we're going to do this. What do I need to do to take care of her? I'm going to have a good time regardless. Let's have fun. Let's do something. Let's make sure she has a good time too. And it doesn't trigger a migraine. Also, generally, if we go to a concert or a big loud experience, I know the next day we need to have a quiet day, which is really hard for me because I'm very loud, but we need to do a quiet day. And It's funny now, I've gotten to be where if I have to people a lot, sometimes I just want a quiet day. So I'm starting to adapt some of your methods. Because when we drive, we don't really talk when we drive, for the most part.
We don't a whole lot unless we're on like a
road trip. But for the most part, she just likes it to listen to her podcast or to listen to music, mutually acceptable music. And you just kind of want to just do that. So I'll say a few things, but not say much. So it's all about learning from your partner and knowing what they can do, knowing their limitations. Clint Eastwood once said, a man's got to know his limitations.
And the thing about it is you have to accept those limitations. It's one thing to know them. It's another thing to accept them. And accept them if you are the healthy or caregiver partner. Accept them, too, if you are the partner with the chronic illness. Because sometimes I am not the best at accepting the limitations either.
You're not. Well, because you don't want to admit it. No one wants to admit they're weak. No one wants to admit they have weaknesses. And I've seen you do some things you did for me and you paid for it the next day, but you wouldn't say anything because you didn't want to make me feel bad.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes it's worth it.
Sometimes.
Not always.
But you learn, you adapt, and the underlying thing that gets you all the way through it is you love each other. You want the best for each other, and you know 100% you're going to do whatever it takes to help them, whether that's leaving them alone, whether that's running out to Waffle House at 1 a.m. because they need waffles, or the 24-hour McDonald's at the gas station because they need a cheeseburger at 2 a.m. You're going to do it because you love them. You're going to take care of them. And you know that. And as long as each partner understands that and knows that they're both in it together, you should be okay. And you know what? It's okay to not be okay. You may have to go to therapy to get to that point. You may have to go and have an honest conversation like, look, you got to do better. All right. I'm doing the best I can with my illness, but I need you to help me. And that's really hard sometimes for someone who's very independent and an only child who to ask for help because they're so used to doing everything on their own. They don't want to ask for help. Strong, independent woman.
Don't need no man.
Don't need no man. Sometimes she does. She doesn't want to admit it. And sometimes I'll try to power through. David, your blood pressure is over 200 because your back hurts that badly. You need to stop.
Yeah, you need to lie down, please.
Yeah. So it happens. And it's a fine line to walk as a partner to take care of the other partner. You don't want to baby them, but you'd want to make sure they're taken care of.
Although sometimes it's okay to baby somebody.
It is. But you got any final thoughts, Springer?
Not really, other than just be kind to yourself and to your partner.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.